Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today, in just a couple hours, there's going to be a key vote in the Seattle City Council to decide whether they are going to criminalize the possession of hard drugs. Of course, we already know that the state law and that whole debacle around whether hard drugs would be de facto legalized at the state level, thankfully, they're not going to be, but it's still up to municipalities to make sure that they have a law on the books to be able to enforce drug possession. So that vote's coming up at 2. We're going to talk about why it matters well outside the bounds of Seattle. Also, some in the business community in Seattle, I saw this yesterday, I was like, shake my dang head. They're taking matters into their own hands when it comes to cleaning up downtown ahead of the MLB All-Star Game in July. And look, I don't blame them, okay? I'm just annoyed that it's necessary. We'll dive into that. Also, crazy polling about Gen Z and the number of Gen Zers who would be okay with government surveillance inside their homes. This is terrifying. And we're going to discuss why this is, why you have so many young people who are perfectly fine with government overreach. And then later on, we're going to talk about work requirements and this whole debt ceiling debacle and how some Democrats are very worried about the work requirements that Republicans were able to sneak in. Before we get to that, just a reminder, if you're not a subscriber to the podcast already, please do so. You can do that at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And there you will find out how you can support the show and our mission to give common sense a comeback for as little as $5 a month. So I had a friend of mine, oh, I hope he watches the episode today. I felt so dang bad when this happened. So Tim Gatos is a friend of mine, and he's not only a radio host in Seattle, but he also is part of an organization that really aims to, I think, have people come together and fix what's wrong with this really challenging city of ours. He's part of Together Washington. So anyway, he sends me this this little notice about a community cleanup that was happening, that is going to happen on June 23rd. And I guess it didn't really sink in that he was like inviting me to attend. And I was like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. And I just immediately started bashing it. And he's like, hey, this is like my thing. So we've been talking about the MLB All-Star Game coming to Seattle. And my concerns, and I think they're shared by people who are being realistic about the state of Seattle, that Seattle's not in a place to be on the world stage. I don't think Seattle is a place to say, hey, tourists from all over, come here and see what we've got. I feel bad about that. I want tourism to come back to Seattle. It's so important for the small businesses that are down there. And it bums me out. But I also don't think it's a particularly good thing for our economic viability long term to host something like the MLB All-Star Game, given the extent of the homeless crisis and the drug crisis, and then you scare people from ever coming back. I mean, God forbid something happens to a fan who's here from out of town. So anyway, we're talking about how I just don't see how the city gets itself together in time, short of going in and sweeping out the area for 5 days and then letting it go back to how it is as soon as baseball fans are gone. So anyway, there is going to be a community cleanup event on June 23rd. With the stated mission of trying to clean up the downtown core to the stadiums ahead of the MLB All-Star Game. It says, Seattle Mariners, Seattle Metro Chamber, and Together Washington invite you to get the city ready for the big baseball event coming up. Meet at Mariners Parking Plaza at 9 a.m. for our kickoff community celebration with refreshments provided. It goes on to say that the cleanup will commence at T-Mobile Park, serving as a rallying point for all participants. The united efforts will focus on cleaning up Pioneer Square, SoDo, and the vibrant Chinatown International District, which have long been integral parts of Seattle's cultural and historical fabric. It goes on, and I just have to read this because it's, again, I get it. I get why it's necessary, but gosh, we should be mad that it is. It says, join the SoDo and CID Business Improvement Areas, Alliance for Pioneer Square, Downtown Seattle Association, Midtown Improvement District, Port of Seattle, Friends of Waterfront Park, ba-da-da-da-da, and a host of other partners in this massive cleanup endeavor. Together, they will dedicate their time, energy, and resources toward transforming the selected areas into pristine and welcoming spaces for both residents and visitors alike. Transforming the selected areas into pristine and welcoming spaces for both residents and visitors alike. And I can't help but be a little bothered by, you know, going back to my previous sentiments about the fact that, gosh, you know, why aren't we putting all our efforts into transforming these spaces into welcoming and pristine environments year round for everyone, for the people who do business down there, for the people who live down there. So again, there's a frustration there that this is necessary. And you have this huge year for the city of Seattle where you've got 7 council seats that are going to be on the ballot. And I don't want to crap on this event. You know, I don't blame the business community for saying, hey, the city hasn't done this for us, so we need to make sure that this MLB All-Star Game is a success. They need it. They need it for their businesses. They need it for the economic viability of the city and for their future success. And so I don't want the MLB All-Star Game to be a mess for Seattle. I don't want it to be a mess for Seattle businesses. I don't want something bad to happen to a tourist. I know there's been some people who have said, no, let the world see how bad things have gotten for Seattle, and then that might be the embarrassment that pushes them over the edge. I don't want businesses to go through that. They've already been through enough throughout the pandemic, throughout, the terrible, terrible environment that I think got even worse during the pandemic. So I want this for them. And maybe if I don't know what I'm doing on June 23rd, but maybe I'll be able to help out. So I don't want Tim Gatos, if you're watching, I don't think it's a bad event. It bums me out that it's necessary. And I really hope that Seattle voters will remember that it was necessary. We just did that Seattle's One Day of Service the other day, where we cleaned up a homeless, an abandoned homeless encampment that had been there festering for years. Did we enjoy our volunteerism? Yeah, I don't want to crap on volunteerism, but it shouldn't have been necessary. That park never should have been in such a bad state of disrepair that it took 100 people 3 hours to clean it up. So I feel the same way about this thing. It also reminded me there was a similar story. So San Francisco is going through a lot of similar things to Seattle. And I would argue San Francisco is even worse. I think San Francisco is probably the worst off city in the country when it comes to the issue of disorder and homelessness and substance abuse. I mean, some of the videos out of San Francisco are just freaking sad, right? But there is, again, this effort to sort of put lipstick on a pig in San Francisco and say, hey, everyone, come on down to San Francisco. The weather is just fine here, no big deal. And to me, I'll play the whole tourism video. There was a video put out by the tourism sector in San Francisco. It's 1 minute long. It's a $6 million ad campaign trying to rehab the city's image globally. And to me, it's a lie. And that's why when I play it here, it's propaganda.
Welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, where it's never the same, but always San Francisco.
San Francisco, I'm coming home again, never to roam again. I come, San Francisco, I don't mean Frisco. San Francisco, here I come. Here I come. Ready? Hey! San Francisco, right when I arrive, I really come alive. When can we go? San Francisco, right when I arrive, I really come alive. When can we go? Dancing in the park, hanging on a cable car. Open your golden gate, you'll let nobody.
Yeah, in any universe, is that a reflection of what's happening in San Francisco? No. Now, do I blame San Francisco for trying to save it in businesses in particular and tourism for trying to save the economy? No, but what happens if you're, bringing tourists there to a city that's not ready and not safe for them and something goes wrong? And that's what I sort of worry about. Isn't in the long term that worse? And the other reason why it's just pure propaganda, and Michael Schellenberger on Twitter had noted this. So the day the San Francisco tourism video comes out, there was an article about how a downtown hotel owner decided that they're just going to pick up shop and move out of the city because they aren't convinced that it's a safe place for tourism. So again, on the exact same day that you have this massive campaign from San Francisco to come out and say, hey, San Francisco, come here. This is a San Francisco Chronicle article. Owner to give up two of San Francisco's largest hotels as the city's path to recovery remains clouded. So you have alternate universes. You have the universe of the, oh, San Francisco ad, come here, things are great, great drinks, people are happy, people are dancing in the street, etc. And then you have one of the largest hotel owners saying, yeah, I'm going to give up ownership of these two hotels because I'm not really sure that that's a good place for tourism anymore. So there's being optimistic and there's being realistic. And I think Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, I'm fine with a little optimism. as long as you're being realistic about the challenges and you're working like hell to fix them. And I'm just not convinced. I think there's been some improvement in Seattle under Mayor Bruce Harrell, but I'm not convinced that, you know, for instance, when I tweeted out this thing about volunteerism, and you have so many lefties in Seattle who are like, oh, you're just negative. If you care about the city, you should care about this too. It's absolutely absurd. Okay, on a similar subject, the Seattle City Council at 2 p.m. today is going to vote on whether to criminalize hard drugs, whether to make it a gross misdemeanor. And, you know, you can have a state law on the books, but again, is Seattle government going to enforce drug possession? Are they going to charge those cases? Are they going to arrest those people? And so I don't know how this vote is going to shake out. I can tell you there are already some council members who say that they're not going to do it. They're not going to vote for it. Councilwoman Tammy Morales, who needs to be voted out for the love of God? I mean, Shama Sawant left on her own. Councilwoman Tammy Morales is like the next worst person on the council in terms of this pro-crime mindset. She tweeted out, she said, we have more than 50 years of data that shows how the war on drugs is a failure, that imprisoning people for substance use disorder doesn't just destroy lives, it makes people 40 times more likely to die of an opioid overdose when they get out. And let me just say of that sentiment from the councilwoman, it is so deeply disingenuous. When they bring up the war on drugs, oh, the war on drugs didn't work. The failed war on drugs didn't work. We didn't have anywhere close to the level of empathy that we have right now, to the level of services. We weren't, during the war on drugs, actively working to try to get people help first, treatment options first. And we're not putting in people in prison in 2023 in America for simple drug possession, for the act of using an illicit drug. That's not an imprisonable offense. Are they spending a couple days in the county jail? Sure, sometimes. But you're acting like this is a repeat or an extension of the war on drugs. Do you see a war on drugs happening on our streets, Councilwoman? Do you see a war on drugs happening on Third Avenue? No, you see an open-air drug market that is completely, completely left to its own devices. So to suggest that we got here in Seattle because of a war on drugs, when anybody who's being honest knows that we haven't had anything resembling a war on drugs in Seattle for a long time, it's so deeply disingenuous. Prosecuting, having the option to prosecute people for low-level drug crimes, drug possession, for instance, open-air drug use in public, that is a tool to get them into recovery. That's not what it was during the war on drugs. That was, hey, you're going to prison. It wasn't like, hey, we have a law against this, but we're going to offer you a bunch of chances at help first. So to compare the two things, again, it's so deeply disingenuous. And it's only because she wants decriminalization of drugs. That's all that is. She doesn't want drugs to be a crime. She's pro-criminal. It's ridiculous. So anyway, Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison, she sent out an email message about all of this and this upcoming vote and the importance of it. She said, if City Council doesn't pass the proposed ordinance, the King County prosecutor has said she won't be prosecuting these cases of drug possession or public drug use, so it would effectively decriminalize drugs in Seattle, possession and public drug use. The goal is treatment and reclaiming our public spaces to make them safer. Our parks, buses, and streets tell us what we've done in the past isn't working, and looking away isn't an option. And thank God, thank freaking God for Ann Davison, for having just a bit of common sense on what's going on. And she's right. We're not talking about throwing people in prison. But you can't tell me that we're in decriminalization of drugs. We're not in a war on drugs. We're in decriminalization of drugs. You look, as she said, at the parks, at the buses, at the streets, and you tell me, Councilwoman Tammy Morales, and other council members who are thinking about voting this down, you tell me that it's working. Anyone who actually thinks that's working has no place in public office whatsoever. And for the love of God this year, Seattle voters, I pray to God that you can see through that and you can see what's happening on the streets and want your city to be able to turn around. So we'll be monitoring that. And of course, we'll talk about it on the show tomorrow. Okay, coming up next, Bob Ferguson just had to settle a massive lawsuit against the state of Washington having to do with the treatment of a developmentally disabled woman. If you recall, it's a lawsuit where his office failed to turn over thousands of pages of documents. Well, now it's going to cost taxpayers big. That's coming up in a moment. But first, are you in the market to sell your home? If you are, why not check out our friend Wes Jones Jones at sellwithwest.com. Him and his team have an innovative marketing strategy where they'll go through, they'll figure out how to get you the top dollar, fewest possible contingencies. They'll get your house listed locally, internationally, so they're the most possible eyeballs on the listing. And he also said right now that he does see a window of opportunity in the market.
There's some pent-up buyer demand because buyers really went on strike starting last August and nothing happened. I should say very little happened the rest of the year. And it feels like we're getting back to your traditional seasonal real estate periods where a lot of home sales happen in the spring. So pent-up buyer demand, not a whole lot of options for buyers to purchase home, means that it's a great time to sell a home if you have to do something.
Yeah. If you have to do something, and he says, you know, there's a lot of people who, especially after the pandemic, they're kind of like on this work-life balance thing, and people can who can work remotely are trying to move to areas where their money will go further. So he's seeing a lot of clients coming into him for that. So check out sellwithwest.com. That's sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. We had mentioned on the show before, and we covered this lawsuit that's ongoing, that had been ongoing rather, between the Department of Social and Health Services, and the lawsuit was brought on behalf of a developmentally disabled woman, and the accusation is neglect. And of course, the Attorney General's office represents DSHS, state agencies, when they're sued. And there was this finding that the Attorney General's office had withheld thousands of documents as part of discovery that were pertinent to the case. And I mean, a really egregious withholding of documents. And the judge was very harsh on the Attorney General's office, fined them, and by them, I mean us, hundreds of thousands of dollars for that. Well, the Attorney General's office today has announced, or I think it actually just happened yesterday, that they are settling that lawsuit to the tune of something like just over $3 million. And I will say that the statement from the plaintiff's attorney was pretty scathing when it comes to Attorney General Bob Ferguson and his office's handling of it. Here's the article from the Columbian. Washington to pay $3.1 million to settle suit in which state failed to turn over evidence. The attorney for the plaintiff said evidence matters. The office of the Attorney General hid evidence and offered nothing to resolve Emily's case. After the court forced the office of the Attorney General to cough up the evidence, the office agreed to resolve the case for more than $3 million. He called the conduct of the AG's office a stain that reaches the highest level. Ooh. And then it says in a statement through his office Monday, Ferguson took responsibility for the errors. His spokesperson said AG Ferguson recognizes that the buck stops with him. Discovery sanctions are unacceptable. And I'm glad they can at least acknowledge that. And the buck does stop with him. When you're in a position of leadership, everything that happens under you on your watch is your fault. That's part of the job, right? And this was, as the judge said himself, a very egregious example of the withholding of documents. And I think it's telling that once they're fined for withholding these documents, then they're like, oh, let's settle the case. Let's settle the case before you have to turn all these documents over. Like, I'd like to see every single document related to that case, because that's a pretty big sum to settle for. But after you've butchered the other side's chances by withholding pertinent, relevant information, and a judge calls you on it, then I guess you have really no other option but to settle. Again, $3.1 million that the taxpayer is going to have to pay out on that. Frankly, it's ridiculous. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Man, I posted my speech the other day on freedom and liberty and the importance of it and how my dad instilled it in me. Now, I will say I'm a millennial. I think I'm considered an elder millennial. So I was born in 88, so I'm like on the older side of the millennials. But there was this study, and this is shocking to me. So Gen Z is, I believe it's generally considered if you're born mid-90s up until like the early 2000s. That's Generation Z. And there was a new poll that found a shocking number of Gen Zers in America, it's by the Cato Institute, support the idea of the government placing surveillance cameras in your home to prevent crime and abuse. One third. So here's the general, I'll show you a couple polls from the Cato Institute. So first of all, 3 in 4 Americans, when you look at Americans overall, and this is not a surprise, the vast majority oppose installing government surveillance cameras in your home, as one would think. I'm actually surprised it's not higher than 75%. That's a little concerning to me. Like, think about that. A government camera in your home. are they going to watch you like shower and go to the bathroom and do it? And what? Think about that. Who would freaking support that?
I have no idea.
That's genuinely insane. 75%, 14% said they favor it, and 10% said they don't know. What level of apathy would lead you to not know whether you would support? Would you support a government camera in your home?
Well, they phrased it to prevent abuse, so that it could document or they could catch abuse.
Yeah,
or
but it doesn't.
Whatever.
It doesn't matter because they're still.
Oh, I agree.
Are they still going to catch everything else? Like again, like you're like date night. You know what are they going to see? It's so weird to me that 10% would say, "I don't know." That's crazy. But when you look specifically at Generation Z, 29% of 18 to 29 year olds. 29% said they would support this. Oh, that's shocking to me.
It is.
You know what? I'm genuinely worried that that's a result of our education system and squashing independent thought. Just raising, and I'm not saying you, but schools teaching a generation of just sheeple. And they're like, oh, yes, I support the government putting cameras in my home to protect me and everyone around me. That's terrifying. 29% of 30 to 44 year olds, so that would be my generation, 20%. That's still a shocking level of acceptance for that kind of government surveillance and overreach. Like,
it's
move
scary to me
China.
That people trust government like that. I don't think you should give that much trust to government.
Of course not. This is an insane proposition. Of 45 to 54 year olds, 6%. Still a lot, 55 to 64, 6%, and 65 plus, 5%. Still, again, 5% is too much to me. It should be 0%. So that was absolutely unbelievable to me. And I don't know what it's going to take to get the younger generation to realize the importance of freedom and liberty and how once you give it away to the government, they're never going to give it back. So this is terrifying. And frankly, as much as I know there are some issues with Gen Z, this was really, really unbelievable. Okay, coming up next, we're going to dip outside of Washington State, talk about DeSantis's war with furries, allegedly. There was a hilarious segment on Fox News last night. I'm going to play a clip from it for you. But first, I've been talking on the show about First Mark Insurance and the First Mark Challenge. So First Mark Insurance is an insurance broker. So you're going to go to them for free. Do the First Mark Challenge. They're going to look at all the insurance that you have right now. They're going to talk to you about your needs. And then they're going to come back to you a few days later and propose what they think would be best for you from a cost perspective, from a coverage perspective. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark. And I gave him permission when he was in here to talk a little bit about what they discovered when Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge. Here he is. Would you say our primary issue is we were undercovered?
I would. Yeah.
And what's the risk for someone of being undercovered?
Yeah, so I think it's real common for us to see on a liability level that folks don't have enough coverage. Because in the state of Washington, there's the state minimum limits of coverage that the state says, hey, if you have these limits, you're legal. And I think that can be confused with legal equals adequately covered, and that's not the case. So the risk is if you get in an auto accident, and you don't have enough coverage, you get in an auto accident that's your fault, and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan or come after your equity in your home or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
Yeah, and it was a really interesting learning experience. And so Mike and I got much better coverage where we can sleep at night now and for about the same price. So it was a no-brainer. And again, we don't pay First Mark Insurance anything, and they deal with everything for you. They deal with everything for you. If you have an incident, you just call First Mark. You don't have to go around trying to call these big conglomerate insurance companies and figure out, are you going to come help me? You just call First Mark and they take care of it. So nice. So check out firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. I'm a member of the First Mark family. I did the First Mark Challenge, and I hope you do too. So let me know if you do and you go through it and how it works out. All right, dipping outside of Washington today, I was watching Fox News with Mike last night. Hilarious segment from Jesse Waters. I don't know if there's a lot of news value in it, but it gave me a good laugh, which was nice. So do you know what a furry is? A furry is like an adult who dresses up as an animal of some kind. Sometimes they'll just wear a tail are like little cat ears. And for some people, furries is a sexual thing. So, you know, you got two people, like one dressed up as a male cat and a female cat, and they like, you know, find a way to do it as cats. And that's a thing for them. Whatever, consenting adults, if you want to dress up as cats and find a way to do it in your cat costume, who am I? But in Florida, Ron DeSantis has prohibited children from being allowed to attend the upcoming furry convention in Florida, which I think is just fine. I don't see, I don't know. Are there probably some furries there who are perfectly kid friendly and not up to any kinks? Yeah, but I'm not sure I'm convinced that there aren't going to be some furries there who are there for kinky reasons. And I don't know who's behind those costumes. Super strange. So anyway, Jesse Waters has on this 32-year-old furry named David Kanazka, who shows up on the show in costume, in a raccoon costume, and agrees to talk to Jesse Waters about the furry frustrations.
Why are you upset that kids are not allowed to be at the furry convention?
Well, me personally, I think that it is a great way to include everyone, no matter, you know, what their age. It's nothing. There's nothing inherently sexual about these conventions. You know, we're misunderstood as a group, and it's very easy to vilify us.
Okay. Do you blame yourself at all for being misunderstood? I mean, you're the one dressed up as a raccoon.
Oh, absolutely. I think that this is absolutely crazy and weird and fun. And that's the point. I think, you know, it's supposed to gain attention. I like being on stage. I like performing as a character. I like bringing joy to people.
Can you blame people for misunderstanding you when you're dressed as a raccoon? Yeah, it was a hilarious interview, and the guy was completely socially awkward, and I will say, having watched the interview, I now understand why kids are not allowed around that man or anybody else. But it's just, you know, it's this whole thing in Florida, and I've gone back and forth with Ron DeSantis. You know, is he taking government overreach too far in the opposite direction? But when it comes to, like, drag shows and kids, I agree with the assessment that you wouldn't take your kid to a strip show. And do I think all drag shows are bad? No, I've gone to a bunch of drag shows. I personally love drag shows, but I have been to some drag shows that were very sexual and where private parts were very either exposed or something was sheer, etc. And so I will say, more often than not, the drag shows I've been to are not appropriate for kids. And then you see them, you know, flipping their legs and splitting their legs in the air and stuff. It's just like, okay, can we just be responsible humans and not let kids around that, so the government doesn't have to make a rule about it? It's just absurd, but I thought that was a good laugh. Nicole, I'm going to skip this next story and go straight into comments coming up next. But first, I've been talking about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, and I'm just feeling so good. I was sitting here with Nicole. I had like my little meal I made myself yesterday. And I was like, you know what? This is delicious. I was like, I'm a chef. And that's one of the things I like about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan is it's not prepackaged meals. I don't have to eat some weird little thing. I get a cook. I get a cook for myself. It's just normal food. And I enjoy it, okay?
And reheat fish.
Okay. So today I had a little faux pas because one of the things I made was some fish. And I microwaved it in the studio microwave. I warned you, though. I apologized before I even did it. Yeah. I was like, hey, I got to eat my lunch because I got a jet after the show today. And it's fish and I'm going to microwave it. And I'm sorry. And I lit a candle help offset the fish smell. But anyway, I'm down more than 35 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. I mean, the pictures I've sent out of myself before and after sell it. I don't even know if I have to sell the plan. But I've heard from so many of you who started around the time I started doing endorsements. And you've sent me pictures. You've talked about how much weight you're down, how much better you feel. And that's really what it's about is, you know, do you feel good where you're at? And I'm just glad heading into summer that I've been able to cut my COVID weight, the vast majority of it. I'm just feeling so much better. So see if the program is right for you. Go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. And it just takes 15 minutes, a little 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan. You can do it virtually to figure out if the program is right for you. And make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. Okay, let's see. On the businesses seeking volunteers to help clean up the city ahead of the MLB All-Star Game, Christine says the city should pay the volunteers to clean it up. Just my opinion. It needs a lot of work. And that's kind of my... Here's what else bothers me. you know, one of the things they said is that we're going to restore these public spaces to pristine, welcoming areas. Do you even realize, we're going to do this assessment ahead of tomorrow. Take note of this, Nicole. You know how many taxes the people of Seattle pay for these public areas, these public parks, to be taken care of? And so you're giving the city all this tax money, and then they don't take care of any of it, and they let it go to hell, and now citizens need to volunteer to clean it up? You're already paying them to clean it up. Now, if the city didn't have these high taxes for stuff like this, and once in a while you're like, we rejected all these taxes, so we should probably go volunteer to clean the park up, like, I would be less mad about it. But you're paying super high taxes to a government that's not fulfilling its basic core functions. And then on top of that, they want you to go out with a mop and a brush and clean up the streets and the parks and the graffiti. I mean, that's ridiculous. Thank you for that comment, Christine, because that is true. They should pay them, or they should give you your tax money back. They should refund the tax money that hasn't actually accomplished what they say it's going to accomplish. Ridiculous. Dana says on San Francisco, you know, putting out this propaganda video saying, come here, everything's great. And did you notice? I'm just going to say it. Look, I like that we celebrate all different humans and different abilities, but it's just this like obsession with being woke. They had this dance scene in the video, and there's like 3 or 4 disabled people in the crowd dancing, you know, a wheelchair and a cane and stuff. I'm like, I get it. That's cool. But you're doing it to like appear very woke. And it was that kind of stuff is very forced to me. Is that mean, Nicole?
No, I think it's all right.
I'm okay with them dancing. I want everyone to dance.
Yeah.
But like when you watch that video, it's like the who's who of wokeism.
Yes, it definitely is. But I think that... Yeah. I'm trying to figure out a way to defend it. There's no defending it. It was so cheesy and weird.
It was. Okay, Rick said...
Desperate is the word that
desperate.
Comes to mind.
Nobody in their right mind would allow these beautiful cities to turn into drug-infested garbage dumps. So I have to believe this is a deliberate attempt by the left to intentionally destroy these cities for what could be several reasons. It's absolutely insane, unacceptable. On the government surveillance of our homes... Robert says, heck, I won't even let Alexa or Siri computerized chick in my house. I will say of Siri, I'm extra nice to Siri. Like when I ask her like, hey Siri, set an alarm for 7 p.m. And then she does it. I'm like, thank you. Appreciate you. Cause I don't want one day for her to like, you know, AI. And then she's like, that chick was mean to me. She never thanked me.
I actually kind of do the same thing with Alexa. When she suggests something, she's like, would you like me to do, you know, add this to your playlist or send this to your up next list or whatever? And I always tell her, no, thank you. And they're like, okay, no problem.
I just want to be nice to them just in case. Just in case. Let me see here. But one other thing it reminded me of is what was it California or Colorado where they had the government like shut off everybody's
Colorado.
Colorado.
Denver. Well, actually, I think it happened somewhere in California as well. Not the whole state, but Colorado. I think it was right around Denver that they shut down people's AC.
Yeah. And so that's the same thing. I mean, it's not surveillance, but it's like you're allowing the government to control the temperature in your home.
Right. Because if you had that's wild. Yeah. And then, I mean, they send you these incentives that if you put these, you know, digital controls in your house, then they'll give you a discount, but it right. also means they can control it. And it says they'll only do it if it's in the paperwork, it says they'll only control it if it's like national emergency or some kind of an emergency. And so then they call that an emergency.
Right.
And
oh, it's an emergency. You got to put the video in your home. When you give the government away, when you give your freedoms away, you're not getting them back. Okay.
Nope.
Penny said, I don't need the government to make rules for me. For me, I will make my own rules and I don't allow that crap around me. Let's see. Nicole, do you want to come on camera with your sunglasses today?
For a minute.
Because Dano says, Nicole, keep the cut clean with diluted vinegar and purified water and keep it moist with Vaseline. Use a thick, juicy steak, ribeye steak on your eye.
I've had the steak thing mentioned to me many times. I think people are really disappointed that I'm using ice packs. But trust me, I'm using a lot of ice packs, hoping the swelling goes down a bit because I have like a second cheek on this side.
Is the steak thing a thing?
Well, I think it used to be a thing. It's not a thing. It's a thing in, I think, the Sandlot. I think it's the Sandlot.
Yeah. My dad used to do super glue for everything. Everything.
Oh, and not me super. It has been suggested that I use some glue on this cut, but we'll see. And then The vinegar thing really creeped me out on that. I'm like, I don't, oh, that sounds painful.
Yeah.
I want to put painful vinegar on my cut here, but I have been putting Neosporin on it.
Yeah. So
thanks for all the suggestions.
Yeah. Jethro says, thanks for making a sick day working from home less sucky, Brandy and Nicole. You're welcome. Although we're stuck because Y said, I keep losing the signal. I'm not sure if it's my internet or something going on with your signals. It was us.
I think it's our bandwidth. I don't know why if somebody was
dipping into our bandwidth.
I know.
Hackers.
Hmm.
The government here heard us talking about surveillance, and they're like, you won't convince the populace that this isn't a good idea. Robert said, the only way to clean up downtown Seattle is at the ballot box. True. 100%.
It really is.
All right. Let's move on to our closing sanity check. Man, this is a good one. So when you have to resort to fear for a campaign of any kind, you've already lost, right? Because I think that's the most, not only lazy campaigning, but it's the most insulting campaigning because you're insulting people's intelligence. Basically that if you just say something scary to them, they'll be like, oh my gosh, okay, I'll do what you say. And I've been experiencing this a little bit since I endorsed Referendum 101 yesterday, which is the referendum that will give voters a choice for whether we keep Senate Bill 5599, which is the bill involving shelters and your kid can go there, say protected healthcare, and then the shelter can hide them from their parents. And to me, it's about voters having a choice. If at the end of the day, voters want to keep it, fine. Like then voters had a choice and it wasn't a handful of politicians in Olympia pushing it through for God knows why, you know? And so online today, there was all these, I call them Seattle's Twitterati. It's like 20 Twitter accounts, which I'm pretty sure it's three people who run all of the accounts. Mm-hmm. I wish I could prove that. And they're like, did you know that a white supremacist transphobe is running the referendum? And so you're aligning yourself with transphobes and you're a terrible human being. And again, it's about they can't argue. They can't argue against the policy or for the policy with facts and reason. So they have to go to impugning the character of people who are involved. And it is an effort at fear-mongering because they don't think you're intelligent. They don't think you're smart. They think you'll see, oh, it's tied to a transphobe, and then you'll just say, no, I'm not signing that thing. And, I mean, we got to prove them wrong. And that's why I love this whole, I love the new me. Why I just don't give a damn. Like, when I used to be on Fox and somebody would call me a transphobe or white supremacist, right wing, I'd be like, oh no, I hope my boss doesn't see that. Like, that's not who I am. And I'd get really bent out of shape. And now I'm like, don't care. Like, what is that going to do to me?
Well, because they throw it out when you know it's not true about other people. So you're like, well, ridiculous. It's just going to be thrown at everybody.
So anyway, a similar thing happened to our friend Jason Rantz. So Bob Ferguson sent out a campaign email for his exploratory campaign for governor. And it is all about fear-mongering against Mark Mullett, a moderate Democrat. Bob Ferguson must be terrified of Mark Mullett because he released an attack ad against him on day one. And then this is his email blast saying, another Democratic candidate just entered the Washington governor's race. You decide if he's your kind of Democrat. Democrat in quotes. And it says, when asked during a 2022 interview whether he supported President Biden's reelected, he responded, I think it would depend on who the Republican candidate was. That was us. He said that to me during our interview on our show. And then they go, he was the only Democrat to vote against protecting reproductive health data. He opposed a $15 an hour minimum wage for Washingtonians. And then this is the last one. This is amazing. Mega conservative talk radio host Jason Rantz plans to vote for this candidate. So first of all, so Jason tweeted that out and he said, this thirsty Bob Ferguson campaign email made me laugh. Apparently, I'm a mega conservative talk show host. So is he a conservative talk show host? Yes. Is he mega? I don't even know if they know what mega means anymore. I do know that right now, if the election were today, Jason Rantz would support Ron DeSantis over Donald Trump. And no, he's not some sort of extremist, but that's what they want to do. You know, I have a theory actually as to why they didn't say that Mark Mullett said that on my show. I think they know that wouldn't be good for them. I think they know it would turn the middle against them if they dare attack us. I hope Bob Ferguson tries to attack us.
I hope he fears you.
I hope he fears, obviously he fears reasonable people because he's clearly scared to death of Mark Mullett. And we got a whole army of just reasonable, rational human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he attacks us, that's it for his campaign. I welcome it.
Makes sense.
I think that he's smarter than that. But, you know, Jason Rantz is solidly in the conservative camp and they do that. The Democrats attach MAGA to everything. Again, it's about fear-mongering.
Mm-hmm.
It's about gaslighting. mega conservative talk radio host Jason Rantz plans to vote for this candidate. And by the way, Jason didn't say he would vote for him or like that. He didn't commit to it. He basically said, you know, if there isn't a Republican I think can win, then I would consider supporting Mark Mullett's candidacy because I'd rather have a reasonable, rational Democrat than someone like Bob Ferguson. So I don't even think that's particularly bad thing when you have some Republicans saying, yeah, I'd vote for that guy.
Right.
He's reasonable. He's nice. So I just find it so telling that Bob Ferguson is so scared of Mark Mullett because they're scared of the middle. You see, I've told you the middle has the most power and he knows that. But it's just insane to me. And I think we have to, you know, again, it's a sanity check. Just remember that when they resort to fear, when they resort to labeling and name calling, it's because they do not have a legitimate argument. So that is the laziest form of campaigning and it's the most offensive, no matter who does it. Whether it's Republicans or Democrats, when they resort to fear-mongering as campaigning, it's lazy, it's insincere, and it's insulting. Little sanity check for today. Okay, that's been it for today's episode of Undivided. Nicole, your face is doing fine. Well, you don't have to go on camera.
It will be. It will be fine.
It's looking rough, Quasimodo.
It's rough looking, yeah. Turns color pretty much by the hour.
Yeah.
Red to purple to blue.
It'll be better. You're still beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
In here. Thanks. I'm just kidding. No, you're still beautiful. Okay. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. A special thank you to Undivided subscribers who help us support the show for $5 a month. You can sign up. Go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And you'll get a link there to sign up on either Patreon or Locals. In the meantime, we will assess our technical issues and we'll see you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.